Good evening, one and all. Welcome along. We're doing flipsies already. It's season 5, episode 47 of the UK Dallas Cowboys podcast. Good evening, sir. How are things?
Yeah, it's all good. We're getting, this is my favorite week now. Combine week is on us. I'm like super excited. I'm like, Rian said to me, speaking to me, and she was like, oh, what are we doing on the weekend? What's the plans? And I was like, combine. It's like, okay. That was it. That's all that needed to be said.
Now, the most important question, Mike, that I have for you, have you been scouting up on your Irish kickers?
Nah. But, I mean, you did say, I know we spoke about kickers. Kickers are the unusual bunch in all of this. But, you know, I should. But the only thing I will say is I'm sticking to Cowboys relevant things at the moment. So yeah. I'm not saying I won't. So I won't disappoint you. I will check them out. But Cowboys do not need kicker. So kicker can wait till the end.
Yeah, basically. For sure. And for anyone that's unaware of what we're actually talking about, as well as three Irish kickers being out in America for the combine, there's also Louis Rees-Sammet, who is a former Welsh rugby player. So this is all part of the international player pathway, which requires every team to have at least one international player on their roster or practice squad.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, people have asked me, a lot of people around here, with the Zamet, the whole thing. They're like, well, what do you think? And I was like, look, you got to understand where these guys are coming from. They're behind the eight ball heavily.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're all like saying, he's put down, he's going to be a wide receiver. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I was like, What you're really expecting of these guys, like in obviously Reese's position, is that he can impress enough. So the good news is he doesn't cost towards both the cap and the roster number. So he's effectively a free extra player. Yeah. So teams are going to have him on there, but whether you give him the trust to run routes, which he hasn't done before, and to catch footballs in a game, which he hasn't done before.
Yeah,
there's still a lot of, like, the issue is he's playing wide receiver. Yet physicality, athleticism is a big part of it. But wide receiver is all about feel. It's instinct. Yeah. And you've got to be, the more natural you are at the position and in your route running, the easier it is. And so far, Reese has played zero American football. So there's a lot there. So when people ask me, I say, look, you just temper your expectations. But when you do see him on the field, it's going to be on special teams.
Yes.
This is where I think, he comes into his own, is that he's got this high-level athleticism. He's a big guy. He's like 6'3", just less than 200 pounds. Yeah, he can run. He can move. He's got some – and he's being – rugby player, they know how to tackle. So to me, that's screaming gunner. Get him as a gunner. And I think even if he just has a career as that, there's no shame in that. That's really good. It's very, very important position. And to go from playing rugby to being a top form gunner in the NFL, well, that just goes to show you how adaptable and versatile as an athlete he is. That's if he gets there.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Joe, it's great to see you. You managed to catch us on time this evening, and welcome along. We have been missing you, but look, we have had a few issues in terms of Facebook and Twitter hacks in recent months. So we're just trying to sort all those things out. But
we are kind of back on Facebook.
Yeah, so we get that sorted out. But before we dive into tonight's topic, Mike, obviously, look, in the last hour or so, we've had news from Stephen Jones that they want to get Dak extended. And I mean, I don't think that's shocking anyone at all.
No. I mean, like, a lot of the stuff that, you know, and I mean, when you look at the interview, it's like a corridor interview. Like, you know, he's just kind of being caught in the corner as he's walking through, which is how it really goes when you're at the combine. You know, nothing he said was shocking. You know, I watched it and I'm like, oh, no, not really. But it's, you know, you try and get the trouble you have is that whenever Stephen Jones, unfortunately, his face flashes up on the rounds for Cowboys Nation, it always stirs up a hornet's nest because people have mixed feelings on what they think of Stephen Jones.
Yeah.
That's just sports. That's, you know, that's the NFL.
Life in general.
Yeah, exactly. You know, people will either love you or hate you. And you know, the comments he's made haven't really gone either way. You kind of like go, Jerry said we're all in. Stephen Jones hasn't said anything that suggests it. And that is what's going to cause the biggest controversy. So, okay, let's see how this goes.
Yeah. Absolutely. And a belated happy birthday to Joe's niece. That's why he was missing last week. But, I mean, look, it's no surprise to anyone that we're going to extend Dak. I mean,
it has to be.
I have the article. Finally, I got the article finished. I've sent it over to you for a read-through and publishing. But, I mean, look, everyone knew Dak was going to be extended. And As you say throughout the season, look, there's maybe 20 starting caliber quarterbacks in this league.
Yeah.
You know. So why would you not extend them? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, it's always the joke, if you like, almost on me, on what people say is they go, oh, look, we should just draft. And I'm just like, yeah, we should just draft, of course, because the answer to every team's problems at quarterback has always been just draft. Because, like, there's never been quarterbacks drafted in the first round that go through their rookie contract and find themselves on another team. Like, that literally never happens, does it? You know? And if you haven't sensed the sarcasm in my voice by now, but, you know, it's all very well and good saying draft a guy. But, like, what you've got to know is that, yeah, okay, quarterback is a very big position you need to solidify. And, you know, if you said with the 49ers, you know, if you had different quarterback, I'm not saying by any means Purdy was the problem of why the 49ers lost that. But you have to think that if there was a different quarterback in there, just like, say, a Dak level quarterback, how different that game would be. So it's not the be all and end all. It's the sum of all parts. And if you manage to find yourself, and like the bit that always makes me laugh when you ask people about where Dak ranks, it always seems to be outside the top 10. I don't know why, because then when they name the top 10 quarterbacks, they never really tally up. Nothing makes sense there. But if you have a top 10 quarterback, then the sum of all parts, you've managed to solve the biggest riddle. And the Cowboys have the biggest riddle solved right now. Other riddles that are really hard to find, there's always, like, you know, cornerback, pass rusher, wide receiver, running back, offensive back. You know, these are all, but they're the sum of the parts that you've got to get. If you can figure out one part, then the rest will sort of work itself out. And that's what the Cowboys are doing. And to just turn around and say, oh, we'll just ride it out. I mean, like, there's plenty of players out there that find this madness that, you know, on different teams, that there are Cowboys fans saying, trade Dak. And, okay, no trade clause, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. You know, there's rules stipulating to that anyway. Yeah, I mean, there's rules to that. I mean, he can still get traded, but it's a finicky. But anyway, I mean, we can discuss it if you want, but but you know, they find there's a lot of players that find it madness that Dak that everyone wants Dak to be traded or to go, or that he's not worth the money, when he just led the league last season in touchdowns.
Yeah.
That he's won 12 games and got to the playoffs in three consecutive years.
Yeah.
And these players, they're just like, you're not listening to yourselves. That the issue people have, that the bad taste that sits in their mouth, is always recency. So the last game Dak plays is the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's a wild card game where they bounce in and out. And they just go, oh, well, Dak's the problem. That's where he needs to go. And you're like, you need to look at, again, the word I'm going to use, the sum of all parts. And Dak was, he had struggles in that game.
Yeah.
He wasn't the sole reason.
He wasn't the only one.
No, he wasn't the sole reason. There was, again, this is sounding like a broken record, the sum of all parts. But in that game, it was a collection of issues.
Yeah.
That came about. But yeah, I think you extend Dak, which helps you out. The cap has gone up by an extra 30 million. So that now means a guy like, say, for argument's sake, like Tyron Smith, right?
Yes.
We were all talking, is Tyron Smith going to be with the Cowboys next year? Well, that extra 30 million now is the reason why you can keep him. Like before, if you said it was like, you know, it went up by another 15 or so, you're kind of like, oh, okay, that's tight. But now you've got an extra 30. And like, to me, that's like, there we go. That's Tyron Smith. Or, you know, that like we was talking before with the wide receivers and we were talking about Brandon Cooks. Well, that's Brandon Cooks staying. You know, you've got that level of comfortability to move your roster, move the cap with your roster around a little bit.
Yeah.
And not be in dire straits. So that's the big thing. And, you know, one of the reasons now that the Cowboys are able to do what they can do is because there's a lot of different things that they can play around with that cap. And doing Dak's contract just gives you more flexibility again.
Yeah. And like, just not to go too deep into it, because look, this is not the show we're here for. But I mean, Joe has kind of said, look, if we don't extend Dak, he's going to make 59 million. He's made that money already, Joe. You know, that's already sitting in his bank account. Mm. And his deal will likely be in the region of 59, 60 million average per year. You know, what you want this deal done for is, as you say, to pull those levers, to give you that ability to go into free agency. And for the first time, and I couldn't believe this, 2012 was the last time we made a major splash in free agency. Brandon Carr. You know, and I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where the Cowboys get stuck, is it's this whole, their whole philosophy on free agency. That it's all well and good saying, oh, look, you know, we want to get these good, because they do draft well, right? The Cowboys draft very, very good. And then what they try and do is they get high production out of these elite guys, and then they want to save that money to try and keep them along. There's other things the front office, unfortunately, do wrong.
Yeah.
That means they have to overpay to keep their guys. Dak is a good example of that.
Yeah.
But the irony here is if they never franchise tagged him that 1 year and they just got the deal done, we're talking this conversation we had last season.
Yeah.
And we're having a totally different discussion about cap numbers and all the rest of it this season.
Yeah.
So the reason that they don't move much in free agency is for that reason. But I think what the Cowboys need to do is they just need to... They're so desperate to cling on to the philosophy because they're worried about what will happen. And, you know, Jerry has been stung so many times in the past. You can kind of see, you know, like he's lost almost like... He hasn't completely lost the trust. But there's just like a sort of a level of apprehension because of stuff that's happened during his time running the Cowboys that he's always just kind of like, a little unwilling to let go of the safety trigger, but he needs to. He needs to let the safety off. Just go out there and just, so you go and you sort CD out, which is a big one. You sort Dak out. You get ready to sort out Micah, but you do it off the idea of we're going to get a load of free agents in this year, which is also going to help us. Yeah. And like, you know, you're going to churn out a lot of roster.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. To me, the window is closing. It's closing quick.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have guys, Tyron Smith, I think this is his last year. I think Zach Martin, this is his last year. I honestly do. From a number of conversations I've had.
Yeah.
I'll tell you off it. I can't do it now because I'd be doing some people a disservice for saying. But
say no more.
Yeah. You know, so there's that, you know, Deron Bland, this is going to be his last year with the Cowboys, possibly. Yeah. I think more with Deron Bland, it's more of the cost that he's going to price himself out.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that they've got to figure out. Because this window is closing quickly. And if you decide that this is going to be, if they do decide, right? Because I'm happy. I'm not happy, but I'd rather that they keep Dak, right? Because we just spoke about the reasons why. But if they do decide to not and just chew up that money this year and move on, it has to be the right choice. Whatever decision, I spoke about this with Meg last week on Blogging Boys, is that whatever decision they need to make it and they need to stand by it and they need to ensure that whatever their idea is, whatever their plan is, they have to stick by and not go half-baked. So not go into it and then be like, oh, did we make a mistake and try and pull back on the reins? Whatever you decide to do, if you decide to keep Dak, you keep Dak, knowing that in the next year or two, while you've got Dak under contract, there's going to be a rebuild. And then you're going to have a Dak that's in his mid-30s trying to get the last glimmer of glory before he goes off down the road.
Yeah.
So the chance, the window, is what I'm saying, is very, very slim now. Because you've got next season, and then you've got maybe 3 or 4 years down the line when Dak's come towards the end of his career, when you're really going to be able to push for any sort of Super Bowl glory.
Yeah. And look, I mean, this is the thing a lot of Cowboys Nation does, and we're not going to spend any time on it, but this idea, get rid of Dak, just draft one, trade him. Everyone loves those buzzwords, buzz sayings, but they've no solution to what to do. And that's the question I keep coming back to everyone. Right, Dak Prescott's not here. Who's under center?
What's your plan?
Who are you giving the keys to this car, you know? And that's the question I'll throw back to everybody.
And that's where you get a lot of people. Because you say, you go, okay, Dak's not here, so what's your plan? And, you know, you get all sorts, and you'd be like, well, Trey Lance. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm not even having this discussion because... The Trey Lance talk is wild. I mean, this is never, when we talk about the players, we're never talking about them as a person. We're talking about them as a player. Sure, he's a great person, fantastic locker room guy, all the rest of it. But this is an FCS guy who, especially towards the end of his time, wasn't really a big or accurate thrower. And in the NFL, you've got to be. You know, what made him so delightful, especially to the 49ers, is his ability to be this dual threat type guy, which is what they've had in the past that worked in Colin Kaepernick. And that is essentially what Trey Lance is. He's developed back there, and you hope that over time, and we've spoken to his quarterback coach when he was in Dallas, and... Yep. He's saying he has come along a long way, but how far along is he in terms of being still that first round type quarterback? It's You know, that's not your that there's too many question marks with Trey Lance. And then you say, okay, well, we'll just draft a guy. Well, there's just as many question marks there as there was before, you know. Wherever you're leaving to, there's massive question marks.
Yeah. So just before we start talking about the defensive tackles tonight, bit of breaking news earlier today was Marvin Harrison Jr. is not going to run at the combine.
He's not taking tests.
No tests. He's not taking part in the Ohio State Pro Day. Mm. There's a few more people have also said they're not going to do it. And it seems to be a case that we're flipping back. The guys are going, well, this is not really that important. I have a body work on tape.
These
tests are not going to tell an awful lot. There are guys who need to go to the combine, obviously. But for guys like a Marvin Harrison, who is guaranteed top five pick, what is combine going to do for him, really?
Yeah, I mean, Jim Nagy asked the question, and I answered it to him. And he said, who's a guy who, regardless of their combine numbers, will not, you know, that needle won't move for you. And I put Marvin Harrison Jr. I said, look, Marvin Harrison Jr. is still, even though he's doing zero tests in the combine, he's still my number one overall pick. I actually think in some ways, so you've got to kind of read between the lines and find out the reason. And this is what I think is quite smart from Marvin Harrison Jr. is he's saying it's about the football, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let me digest that and find out what you mean by it. And what he's saying is that rather than me spending time testing, because this guy, you know, like on scoring, when he does his athletic score, we all know his RAS score is going to be like 95, 96, 97. You know what I mean? It's a given. You know that this is coming because you can see it. You see it time and again. And you said it. It's all about the tape. Tape is going to tell you everything. And there's nothing really on the testing that's going to tell you what you already can see on tape. Yeah. And he's saying it's all about the football. I want it to be about football. And reading between it is how I've interpreted it, is that the combine, all these boys, you know, these prospects, as they're training for the combine, they're training for the combine. They're not training for football, right? It's like a driving test. You don't ever go for your driving test to prove you can drive. You prove you can pass a test. Yeah. You learn to drive after you pass the test.
Yeah.
So with Marvin Harrison is, for him, it's more because he wants to concentrate on football. He now doesn't need to prepare for a combine. He can prepare for life in football. Plus, you think he spends, so Ohio State, so you think they haven't played football since January. So instead of him training for the combine, he's training for life in the NFL. So now that means he hasn't had to do all the testing. He hasn't got to do all this work to prepare for the combine. Because you think all of these boys have finished playing football in college. They're now straight into training camps and all the rest of it to prepare for the combine. Then they go from the combine into rookie mini camps, from rookie mini camps to training camps to preseason to season. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But Marvin Harrison now, he's just preparing for life in the NFL. He's doing whatever it is he's doing, but it's not intense training. It's more training to keep himself at a level he needs to be. Yeah, ready. And it's a completely smart move because now he just goes on now. He could take a slight rest period and then do whatever it is it's necessary, go to the draft. He's still going to get drafted in the first round early, and he's going to go to that team, and he's going to be prepared. And nobody's going to be like, oh, you didn't go in the combine, so you didn't test in the combine, so we might not start. You know, you said the big thing. The big thing with Marvin Harrison is what can you see on tape? And you see on tape a complete athletical demon. He knows how to play football. He's impossible. He's not impossible, but what the teams had to do to play against, to defend against Ohio State was take Marvin Harrison Jr. out of the game. That was the plan because there was nothing else beyond that for them.
Yeah.
So the idea was is take Marvin Harrison out of the game and we should beat them. But it's the fact that there was so much emphasis on just this one guy that tells you all you need to know. You go to his, you go not to last season, but 2022, you'll just see a guy dominating absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do.
For me, Marvin Harrison, and I've just come up with a new word, he was unshutdownable.
He's fantastic. He, you know, I like, put it this way, I try and think, I tried to think how I felt about a wide receiver with Marvin Harrison, and the only one I can think that's in recent time is Julio Jones. I can remember Julio Jones coming through. And like I was like it with Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper going, I mean, in college, an absolute rock star. You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, he goes to the what was the Oakland Raiders at the time, which kind of naffed him up a bit. But Julio Jones was previous to that. And I could just remember him being like, this is insane. This guy is this guy is going to win everything. And that's how I kind of see that Marvin Harrison is on that same level as Julio Jones.
Yeah. So just quick comment here. Joe did put a comment in here to us. He said, we need to sign a veteran linebacker in free agency. No rookie linebacker in the draft will help you this year. I think I disagree with that and say, Joe, maybe go back 2 weeks ago when we did the off-ball linebackers. And Mike is going to laugh when I say it. Edger and Cooper, Texas A&M, will help you this year.
He definitely helped you. But I agree with what you're saying. I also agree with Jeff. Like, there's a mixture of two because essentially the Cowboys are just lacking in just linebacker numbers.
Yes.
When you think it's a volatile position, we've got question marks with both DeMond Clark and DeMarvion Overshown in terms of durability. DeMond Clark showed last year he can handle it, but obviously you still, there's still obviously from where he came from with LSU with the injury, you still have that slight niggle. DeMarvion Overshown hasn't played a snap in the NFL. So, you need to draft linebackers. You need free agent linebackers too.
Yeah.
Because it's a volatile position. But also, linebackers, tight ends, running backs, you know, these are the type of guys that also play special teams. So you need these guys to just fill up the special teams roster as well, the lineup. So it's a little mix of both, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, Luke Gifford made a career in Dallas out of special teams.
Yeah.
Rarely played as a linebacker, but made a career out of it. But,
I mean, in fact, Luke Gifford as a linebacker, sometimes you watch it, you were just going, oh no.
Yeah. Very much so. But look, we're here to talk about the interior defensive linemen. I mean, I think if we're being honest, again, it's we don't really need a three tech. We don't need a pass-rushing defensive tackle. We need an anchor defensive tackle. And, you know, we hope that Mazi is that guy. But if he's not, look, there's a couple of guys that we said we'd discuss tonight, and hopefully one of them could be that guy, because you probably will get a defensive tackle at 24.
Oh, yeah, easy. I mean, like, whenever I've run mock drafts, there's a plethora of defensive tackle there. The irony is that those middle stuff in, because what you're after is kind of really you're after another Oso Odighizuwa. And Osa, I think, is totally fine in what he's done. I think, in fact, Osa is probably priced himself out of staying in Dallas at the moment.
His
contract is going to be, so contract talks for him will be next season, and it'll be if he, because he keeps on this nice steady incline, and if he continues on that incline, and he plays the way he does. He, you know, you're kind of projecting him to do next season.
Yeah.
You think, man, how could the Cowboys, because defensive tackles that can play like that, you can see how quickly their price runs up.
Yeah.
Because they're hard to find as well. So you're kind of after something like that in that version that can play a kind of like a mixture of everything. But they need to be the bigger, bulkier guys is what the Cowboys are after. None of these like type guys, you know, like I spoke about Chauncey Golston, how you think of the Zimmer defense, where does he fit? Like for the Dan Quinn system, fantastic. Because you can play a number of roles. For the Zimmer defense, no, you need to be able to you need plenty of sand in your pants, anchor down. You need to be able to hold up. A lot of it is predicated against the run with Zimmer. So you can imagine the type of defensive tackles he wants to get. Mm-hmm. And that's what they need to look into in this draft. And like you say, that's what we're going to be looking at now. So a couple of guys here.
I mean, possibly the two best defensive tackles last year in college football were actually playing together.
Yeah,
at my much beloved Texas Longhorns, in terms of Byron Murphy the second and Tavondre Sweat. Mm. Both of these guys are guys who have sand in their pants.
Yeah,
they have get off. They have anchor ability, and they are going to shove that pocket backwards. I mean, if anyone did not see the Shrine Bowl that Sweat was at, or was the Senior Bowl?
I tell you, man, I've got it written down.
Where he literally pushed the Arkansas center back.
Senior Bowl, it was in the Senior Bowl. I got it,
yeah.
I made a note of it.
Like, the Arkansas center is no mug.
No.
And to be fair, he did hold his own in other snaps, but of course, a snap like that where Sweat basically ran over him and ran him backwards is always going to get highlights and clicks.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was just reading something there. I'm trying to read Tavondre Sweat. I mean, let's start with Tavondre Sweat. Because I wanted your take, obviously, because knowing Texas, I've only like passively so far looked at Sweat, because I've done Byron Murphy and I've even done a report on him. My scout report on him's out. So as you say, played together. So you kind of like, you know, sometimes you do it, and it sometimes happens with players on the opposite side of the field too, where, you know, certain players just catch attention. So you're like, I'm watching Byron Murphy, and all of a sudden your eyes move across to another player who's doing something else. And that's Tavondre Sweat. I'm noticing it. I haven't done a full deep dive on him yet, like I have done. So that's why when we picked these names, I was just like, right, I need you to talk to me about Tavondre Sweat and what he is and what he's like.
Yeah. I mean, look, the first thing you're going to notice about Tavondre Sweat, 6'4", 350 pounds. Mm. I mean, if that's not a classic one-tech, run-stuffing defensive tackle or nose tackle, I do not know what is. It's size, it's body mass. He's also got a scheme versatility, initial quickness, and he is very strong at the point of the attack. As I say, that snap, where he's literally pushing the Arkansas center back, and he's literally folding him backwards on his knees. That's the kind of guy you're talking about here. You know, as you kind of always say, you want that guy who looks like he's playing with his kids. Yeah, that's what Tavondre Sweat is.
Nice. Again, so, any pass rush?
Oh, huge amount of pass rush. Like in that game against Alabama in Tuscaloosa this year, the defensive line for the Longhorns absolutely ran all over the Alabama Crimson Tide offensive line. That's an offensive line with J.C. Latham, who's going to be a first-round offensive tackle going off the board. I also think that their center is coming out this year. So he's, you know, like that's the caliber. And like most of the time, Alabama have five-star recruits playing on their offensive line.
Yeah.
and they bullied them. No team has gone into Tuscaloosa in the last, I think it nearly in the Nick Saban era, and bullied Alabama in the way they did. Like, I think the stat that came out at the end of the game was the Longhorns won by 10, and they could have won by more than that. And no team had ever beaten Alabama by more than 10 at Tuscaloosa in the Nick Saban era.
I do remember seeing that game. I was watching something else and it was coming through and I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
but wild. So given with him, is there any major negatives with him, or what are the negatives in general?
The negatives, and it's his pad leverage. He can get forklifted a little bit. You know, it's trying to make sure that he's low enough that he can't be lifted up. And I mean, for a 350-pound guy, if you're lifting him up, that's a worry. His motor is a little bit of a worry as well. And it's because that thing with Texas. Texas were rotating their line. It's kind of like that Dan thing last season. Where Texas were nearly rotating the whole defensive front every snap. You know, so like that, there was snaps where you had T'Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy in together. There were snaps where Murphy was out and Baron Sauer was in. And there's another guy, I cannot remember his name at the minute. But like, they never kind of had a consistent three down defensive tackle. So that's something that you will need to watch out for on the tape. It's like, will he do it every down, every snap? And can he play at that NFL level every down, every snap? You know, as we say with defensive tackle, you can't measure them on their first year because they're getting up to speed. They're getting used to what's going on in the NFL and they're having to play every down most of the time. And that's where you have to be wary with Sweat, is that he's not an every down defensive tackle.
So would you say then the guy next to him, so this guy I have looked at, Byron Murphy, would you call him an every down guy?
I'm not sure. He has a higher motor than T'Vondre Sweat, but that's natural given the 3-stone weight difference between Sweat and Murphy.
So
you're not going to, I suppose, to be fair to T'Vondre Sweat, you're not going to expect him to play every down of 350 pounds.
Yeah, exactly.
Murphy is closer to 300, 310. So you would say, yes, he has that little bit of a higher motor.
That's a guy you can play. Yeah, that's what I was hoping you would get it to. I was like, let's see if he gets it. But no, spot on. Because, I mean, like, the thing with Byron Murphy, a big thing for me when you think about how the Big 12 works and how well Texas played last year. I mean, like, you're talking of T'Vondre Sweat, and then you go, right, but hold on, Byron Murphy, all Big 12 first team, and he was Big 12 defensive lineman of the year. So straight away, you kind of like go, oh, okay, checking boxes. Yeah. For me, when I watched him, the thing that literally stands out on tape straight away, and like, you could just get any play and just put it on and you'll spot him, because Byron Murphy, I don't know how he's able to do it, whether he's got like a sixth sense or whether he's got some form of telepathy or whatever you want to call it, that it's his first step that not only is it wildly explosive, like it is an elite first step. The acceleration and burst on this guy is insane, but it's timed to perfection all the time. You just go, oh wow, and he's away and he's gone. I'm trying to see if I have, so you say, oh, a guy who's timing his snaps, you know, that can be a bit risky sometimes. Zero penalties, didn't get caught once offside or going early, neutral zone infraction. Guy is straight into it. Yeah. I do like that. And one of the things that he had to have a lot of as well was he needed to be double teamed, because he was just so quick off the mark, so much acceleration burst. He had to demand those double teams. It was just no, it was just like, you just had to. He just had to have it, because if you put him just hat on hat, the guy, he's beating him.
You're done.
And you can see he watches a lot of tape. You can see he's that type of blue collar guy, which is something I think the Cowboys need, because you can see he understands the personnel and what he's dealing with, because he's able to know how to. And the only way players are able to do that, and I think also it times in with his ability to time the snap, is because he's watching tape. That's a really, really good thing. Now, you were talking about motor with DeVondre Sweat. I see no issues with Byron Murphy's motor.
No, there's like, not.
Yeah, that is that is really, really good. Now, my issue with him, as you already mentioned it, is that in the NFL, I feel he's going to be, for what that he's expected to do because of his traits, he's undersized.
Yeah.
That is my issue. So I'm not saying undersized doesn't work, but they're a unicorn. They are very, very few and far between. So it is height. It's a mixture of the three. Is height, weight, and arm length are a concern because they're all undersized.
Yeah.
And what you want is you want a guy who's undersized. Like when you see a guy who's undersized, you want him to, I'm trying to think of the word I'm finding yet. I'm trying to find that guy who's undersized. I'm trying to think of Aaron Donald, right? Aaron Donald, brilliant with his hands. He'll chop. He's agile. He's fast. That's what you need with Byron Murphy. And it's not quite there in that sense. So for a guy who's undersized, I think it's going to struggle with him. The other one as well is he's insanely aggressive, right? That's fine. That's fine. I don't mind it. But I watched on tape quite a lot where Byron Murphy is in the backfield on his own. Because he's so quick, he's so aggressive to get into the backfield. Teams were able to know that that's what he's doing. And basically, like for a quarterback, if he just shifts his weight a little bit and moves forward, Byron Murphy is just, because he's just like a raging bull, he's gone. And he's just into the backfield where there's nobody there. Because the quarterback's just gone, okay, you're coming this way. I know what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
So it kind of made him that way. It made him that way, kind of neutralize himself on the play. And then going back to the size of his issue, and I spoke about it earlier, that he demands double teams. Because he's undersized, he's not able to take those double teams on. I don't think whenever I've seen him get double teamed, I didn't see him beating that very often. Mm-hmm. Because he's just, he doesn't have the mass. He doesn't have the mass to take it on.
Yeah. It's, as you say, look, it's sand in the pants that you want. Yeah. And I mean, if you're looking at these two guys, some team might double dip on these two guys because they're so productive, is you're going, right, Sweat is my first and second round guy. Mm-hmm. And Murphy is my third down pass rushing three tech who can get into the backfield. But you rightly say the concern with Murphy is he's so regularly in the backfield. And Michael Penix did this in the college football semifinals.
Yeah.
Penix, as you say, one, two shifts, and Murphy is taken out of the game.
He's just running around back there on his own.
Yeah. It's a teaching you're going to have with him and go, right, it's great that you have this ability to get into the backfield. But we need you to do more now. We need you to actually get the quarterback. So, yes, you have explosive get-off. Because it is. It's literally, the ball is snapped and he's gone. He's already past the guard or past the center. And you want to go, okay, you've done that. Now, let's get the rest of it. Let's get the rest of it into your head going, right, okay, there's my target. This is my lane. There's the quarterback. Hit him.
Yeah, and you know, like it's one of those things where the defensive tackle position is a little bit selfless. But yeah, we all love the tackles for loss, the sacks. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sometimes though, and especially in the you know, the way Zimmer's going to try and move this defense around, because he's the master of using linebackers to fill the hole. Zimmer is. But that what that means is it requires defensive tackles in the run game to hold this spot, to hold their own. This is your gap, and you need to hold it, because don't worry, the rest will fill in for you.
Yeah.
And if Byron Murphy is screaming into the backfield like a raving loony, you're giving up gap control. So what happens then is you've now got an offensive lineman on a linebacker, and that running back is only going in one direction, and that's straight downfield into a massive hole. So that's the big concern with me. But I still think he's a really good player. If the Cowboys drafted him or Sweat, I'd be very, very happy.
Yeah.
More of a guy, though, I think they need to look into, who keeps landing on my mock drafts I'd be doing, and I had one today asking people who they prefer, is Johnny Newton from Illinois. And I really like this guy. he's getting close to being one of my pet cats in the first round. So Jazan Newton from Illinois, in case you're wondering. Everyone calls him Johnny, but I mean, this guy, production all the time. I mean, he got 43 pressures, 8 sacks last year, but he also had 32 defensive stops, 9 tackles for a loss, 4 fumbles. I mean, this guy does it all, right? He's the Big Ten Defensive of the Year, so we're going from one big to the other Defensive Player of the Year. All-American last year and the year before, so big thing. But this guy, he's not so on my board. I've done my first round grades. He is my last one. He's number 19, so he has a first round grade, and he's the last one. After that is the cutoff. I mean, this guy just does it all. I mean, he's just on my report. I just put, he is as dominant as they can be. He really, really is. And as a pass rusher, here's a crazy one for you, right? I looked at this stat. I love this.
Yeah,
you're gonna like this. As a pass rusher, right? Now, bear in mind, I would say he's about as good as a run stopper as he is a pass rusher, right? But at the defensive tackle position, in the last 2 seasons, Newton registered 102 pressures, right? So no other defensive tackle in that same time registered more than 78.
Yeah.
That's how productive this dude is.
Yep. And I mean, as you say, he's coming out of Illinois. Brett Bielema was his coach. And Brett Bielema is a specialist when it comes to getting defensive linemen into the NFL.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got a history of it from all various angles. But, I mean, there's this. But, you know, we're talking about Byron Murphy with the hands. This guy has no issues with the hands. He's very technical in what he can do with his hands. And this is what we come back to when we talk about efficiency in the NFL. Where are you efficient? Like, you could be a physical dominant guy. And I think somewhat the issue with Byron Murphy not being as technically sound with his pass rush moves in his hands is because he's been able to physically dominate. Yeah. So when you're like, they're kind of like the Mazzie Smith effect. Mazzie Smith was able to dominate so easily that he never technically got there. But with Newton, he has the athleticism, he does. But with his hands, oh my goodness. And he's got a number of pass rush moves as well in the bag, a lot of tools. His club, the club swim that he has, I mean, is just lethal. Like, he uses that to such perfect timing and perfection. Unbelievable. And then you look at, like, I put, you know, the issues with Byron Murphy's hands. You do see it. that he can overextend. We talked about Tyler Guyton. Guyton's a guy who had issues with his hands and striking. Yeah. Not Newton. I mean, Newton's hand striking is just perfectly on point. It's well timed. It's right on target. Yeah. He's got the strength to bull rush if you wanted him to. But like, he's a very, very, for his size, for this guy, for how big he is, if you really, he's got the ability, and he did it in college for Illinois, to play defensive end as well. And you're just like, that's just wild. You can't have a man of this size, but he can do it because he's so flexible. I mean, this guy's 6'2", 298 pounds. We'll see what he comes in at the combine. Yeah. But he could play defensive end if he wanted to, because he's got the flexibility to bend and get around.
So the question I'd have for you there, Mike, and I don't mean to cut across yet in this, is are we not saying then that maybe he's a touch undersized, or does the technique make up for that?
So the issue with Newton, and I'm trying to think of how he projects in the NFL. So the issue you've got is he's this undersized defensive tackle who's got great flexibility, who could play defensive end. The issue is he's got really short arms, right? I can't wait to see what this comes in on the combine. So you kind of like go, oof. So then the idea is that puts him, that will put most coaches off trying to play him as a traditional defensive end. So then you say, well, let's play him as a traditional defensive tackle. And the issue is again, he's wildly undersized for that position. Yeah. So with Newton, you've got this fantastic foundation of, you can decide when you get him what you want to do with him, but you really do need to have a plan, because this is a guy who I called the jack of all trades and the master of none. And I mean that in terms of what position you can play him in the NFL. Yeah. So he could do it all, but he's not really the master of any, because of either physical limitations. Well, really, that's it. The physical limitations on where you want to place him. You've got to bring him in, but you've got to have a plan for him. Do you want him to shed down, get him a little bit shiftier, get him a little bit faster and play him defensive end, or do you want him to bulk him up and play in the middle? You've got to have that plan. And again, this is a guy who struggles to beat double teams, mostly due to his mass. So if you are going to play him in the middle and you want him to be this guy who could do a little bit of everything in the middle, you need to put bulk on him. You need to put mass on him to help get through some of those tougher times when he's been double teamed in the game.
Yeah. And I mean, if we look at a Cowboy specifically, I mean, I'm not trying to make a direct comparison, but we kind of have that guy on the roster already in Chauncey Golston, who really is a defensive end, but has played a good bit of defensive tackle to get him on the field. And if you bring in another guy, as you say, and look, we saw with Mazi Smith last year, he came in and he dropped so much weight during the season that, you know, effectively he couldn't act as an anchor because he just didn't have the weight, the sand in his pants, as we say. I don't
know why they did that either. That's still really confusing to me, why they got Mazi. Like, it's like make your mind up with what they wanted to do. And I think they still do. So it's an awkward, but I don't get it. But yeah, I'm with you that they kind of, you've got to make a decision and a plan on that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, apart from that, is there any other knocks or things we need to watch out for, as you say, Mr. Newton?
No, I mean, in that sense, because he's got no major red flags. There was a handful of penalties, but I think that's mostly some of that is because of the rest of the talent around him.
Yeah.
But he is really good. I like him. If the Cowboys If the Cowboys drafted him, I'd just be like, okay. And to me, I think if they did draft him, knowing how Zimmer operates a defense, he's going to play as a defensive tackle and watch to get him bulked up.
Yeah.
That would be my plan for him.
So if we move on to the next guy then that we're going to talk about, and this is the final guy we're going to talk about tonight. We're talking about Leonard Taylor, out of Miami.
Yes.
6'3", 305. You know, again, big guy. Maybe a little bit undersized for defensive tackle in terms of weight.
Yeah. Yeah. Funnily, a few weeks ago on one of the draft shows, I can't remember how many weeks. It was maybe about 4 weeks ago. I had Mike Tagg come on. And until the Aggies played the Hurricanes, I never knew Tagg was a Miami Hurricane fan. So we didn't speak much that week. We got him on, and I was talking about Leonard Taylor, and I said, look, this is how I see Leonard Taylor. That is this guy who shows all the athleticism and the talent to be a first-round defensive tackle. The issue why on my board he's not is that it's funny because if you get the clips, if you get the thing that we have where you just get the player when they're on the field, you go through it and you watch this guy who has this wild arc of play. So the start of the game, he comes in slow, then all of a sudden, pow, and he's making these moves where he's just bursting through the hole, and the explosiveness is wild. And you go, okay, this is a first round guy. And then all of a sudden you get to the fourth quarter, the start of, and you're just watching him do nothing. And he's just standing, he's being bullied around, he's being pushed around, he's on the ground. And you just go in, what is going on here? And then, I can't remember which particular game it was, and he was against a very undersized offensive lineman. He just couldn't do anything. And you're just like, what? And then all of a sudden, then you'll put on the next game, and you'll go the entire game, and you're like, this is a first-round guy. And then you'll put on another game, and you'll watch the next one, and he's doing nothing. And you're just like, well, I don't get it. And I asked Tagg, and Tagg was just like, welcome to Miami. And he's just like, this is what it's like to be a Miami Hurricanes fan. You watch this team that will, and I mean, they beat Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Which kind of pissed me off, but there we go. But because they had like one of those games that, you know, it's your barometer of how the team is. And they lost to Miami. So I was kind of like, oh, here we go. It's that year then. So. I speak to Tag, and he's just like, you'll see this team do this time and time again, where they'll look fantastic together. They'll be this team that will, you think, this year it comes. It's the Hurricanes are coming back. And then all of a sudden it just falls off a ledge. And he's like, Leonard Taylor is the best example of that. Now, he's strong. He's very physical. Yeah. At the point of attack, brilliant. Speed and quickness, fantastic. When he manages to get his motor up and going, I mean, that thing runs hot. I mean, he's fantastic. But here's the problem, is that all of a sudden, at some point in the game, he will hit a brick wall, and it just all goes. Pad level is bad. He's inconsistent. He's high. He can't beat double teams. He does this thing where he stares at the floor. I don't know where this comes from. And I've tried to ask Tag about this, but he's exploding off the line and his head is down and he's looking at the floor. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, how are you supposed to react to what's in front of you if you're looking at the ground?
Yeah.
And you say, okay, well, it can't be that bad. And I'll say this to you. It is that bad. All you have to do, and I know stats stay in school, but this dude had, last season, three tackles for a loss and one sack. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. I get what people are saying. Forget the stats. Look at the traits. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But what I'm looking at the traits is a guy who's inconsistent that will fall off and cool very quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's seen in production. If you're not getting sacks in college, how am I supposed to sit here saying that you're going to get sacks in the NFL where it's harder to do that?
Yeah.
And that's where I leave it there. I've got into two arguments over Leonard Taylor with people from the Scouting Academy, other members, not the lecturers and what have you.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, listen, if you're not, I get what you're saying. Don't look at the production, look at the traits, look at the athleticism. Okay, fine. But there's certain things you kind of say, if it's not happening in college, why are you expecting there to be this jump in the NFL? Now, The only thing I will say with Leonard Taylor is what he needs cracking, and I think it's not a physical issue, it's a mindset. And I think somebody just needs to take Leonard Taylor and unlock that potential that's there and make it consistent. Because if that guy is doing it on every play, I mean, you're talking Pro Bowl or pro player.
Yeah.
You need to unfurl what's in there and keep it going throughout an entire game. But the trouble I have is, like, you have to go off what you see. I can't go off the premise when I'm doing my rankings that it will happen because he's with an NFL coach. I haven't seen it on tape. I'm not willing to take a gamble and be like, this is the guy. So for me, Leonard Taylor falls into the typical Dallas Cowboys second round pick philosophy. That he's that project guy with a lot of potential. Yeah. Usually these guys, the Cowboys take, have got like medical flags or off field issues. You know, like a slip in some form of production. Well, Leonard Taylor falls into that. And I think second round, okay, is fine. The only problem I've got with it is that it doesn't fall into the Jerry Jones all-in thing. Like, you can't take a project guy this year and say that you're all in. If you do that, I'm completely that's it. I'm not listening to a single word you're saying. Because Len Taylor isn't that. He's a project guy that I if I had to guess, I think somebody who, if he goes to the right type of team, I'm trying to think of some, and they can just crack the code with him.
San Francisco. And,
and just be like, this is what you need to do. This is your job now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe perhaps other distractions that are off his table, you know, like having to not go through classes and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's a little bit of a help to him. I don't know. I can't be willing to do when I'm sitting here and we're talking about the player and the position and the Cowboys. Yeah. I can't say to you with any level of confidence, it'll be fine. He will come out of his own. All I can say to you is he's inconsistent. I see it on tape. I don't want that in the first round.
Yeah. I mean, that's my take, and a lot of the reports I'm reading is adequate, inconsistent, adequate, not a high motor, not great IQ. He's a risk.
Yeah.
And like, of the four guys we've talked about, this is a guy you would not touch. You definitely are not taking this guy in the first round.
No.
It's a risk to take him in the second round. And potentially it's still a risk in the third round.
Oh, no. I think, you know, last year, because we're thinking the Cowboys are drafting the bottom of the second round, right?
Yeah.
That's why I'm just thinking he's a bottom of the second. It's almost practically a third round pick. I mean, that's ideal. That's the sweet spot. of where it is. But here's the irony. I don't think he makes it to the Cowboys' second pick. He's gone way, way, way before, because people will fall in love with the positive. So, like, if you was to just go on YouTube, type in Leonard Taylor highlights, so you only get the highlights, the good reel, you just watch that and you're blown away. You're just like, wow, this is the guy. And, you know, a lot of these people who you talk to on social media, most of them will send you, when you say something negative about a player, the first thing they always do is send you a link to the player's highlights. And I'm like, don't show me the best of them. Why are you showing me highlights? I need to see the whole picture.
Show me the worst.
Yeah, show me the bad stuff too. You show me the highlights. Of course, you're going to have a different perspective on him when you're just only seeing the good things. And with Leonard, that's exactly what it's like. You put the highlights on and you just go, wow, this is a first round. This is the second coming of Aaron Donald. You really do. No, you do. When you watch it, you think, wow. But it's just so all over the shop. You watch it and you just kind of, you get dumbfounded with what you're watching it and you're like, I don't even know what to call what you're doing right now. None of it navigates in what you're trying to do. Like, what was your landmark during this game for you to move to that angle? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And that's what it is. And, you know, he did have an undisclosed injury in 2023. I love the undisclosed. Plenty of them. So there is something, and I don't know if that hindered him perhaps a little. The issue is the NFL team's in a combine this week. They're going to find out more about that than we are. We will never find out. So I think there's going to be a team that falls in love with the positive traits that Leonard has, and they're going to draft him early. They will. It'll happen.
Yeah. And I mean, pray tell that happens between pick 24 and pick 56.
Mate, I just think that this guy, he could very well be a Pro Bowler. But he's just this guy who I have a difficult time with certainty of being able to tell you. I know it's hard to say anyway in the draft, but you know, like what you're always trying to do is you're trying to eliminate questions, is really all you're doing. You're watching tape, you watch the combine, you listen to things and you read things, and you're just trying to eliminate questions and questions. But there's just one big one that circles around Leonard that you can't, that no matter of tape or combine or any testing interviews will give you the answer to. It's just that he's that difficult to project.
Yeah. So that is our take on interior defensive linemen. We might come back around to this later on in the process when we've kind of gone through some of the other areas. But what is coming up on UK Cowboys for the rest of this week, Mike?
So on draft show on Thursday, we'll look at some second round guys. So we'll look at guys in the second round. We'll see who's available and who's on. Try and get some more guests in. At the moment, because it's the combine, it's hard to pin people in at the moment. Yeah. And next week will kind of be like that too. So we'll look at guys in the second round. We'll look at guys who are important to the Cowboys in the combine. And we'll take it from there then.
Yeah. And I don't know if we did this, but did we give a shout out to a certain gentleman over at DallasCowboys.com?
Well, for triplets.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've sent him a message and they're very happy. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's happy, which is the main thing.
Absolutely.
So I did warn him. I said, get ready. That checkbook's about to be out a lot more.
Yeah. He should get on to Jonesy. But for anyone who's kind of struggling and going, what are they talking about? So Kyle Yeomans and his beautiful bride, Katrina, I think, is it?
Yeah.
Celebrated the birth of triplets last week. So a big shout out from all of us to them. So anything else before we get out of here, Mike?
Yeah, should we pay the bill?
We shall pay the bills.
Here you go. I got you. Sorry. Oh, go on, you go for it. Go on. You go for it, mate.
So for anyone who is traveling out to Dallas in 2024, make sure you give Barry, Michael, and the team over at Cowboys Experience a shout. They will organize your game day tickets, your accommodation, stadium tours. They hope to meet and greet the day before the game. They have a tailgate party the day of the game. You will get to meet the great and good of former Dallas Cowboys and hopefully some present Dallas Cowboys during your visit. And if you use that promo code right there in the bottom right-hand side of the screen, Mike, what do you get?
Free stuff.
So make sure and use that UK Cowboys promo code.
Yeah.
I'll hand it over to you as I say goodnight to announce what will be happening on Thursday.
And it's goodnight from this dude too. See you all on Thursday.